The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Well, it's funny how the topic of the Middle East and what's going on over there kind of comes and goes, depending on what's happening there, what's happening in the news here. And then, of course, with what's been going on in Afghanistan, obviously the last 20 years, but the last couple of weeks, that throws a whole nother wrench into the scenario on what's happening between Israel and all of the Arab nations and, of course, Iran and Iraq. It's very, very complicated, very, very difficult to understand. And, of course, for most of us as followers of Jesus Christ, we know that we're supposed to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And so we struggled through that as well. And so recently we had Mitch was on from Dr. Mitch Glazer was on from Chosen People Ministries. And he was talking about their incredible ministry in reaching Jewish people, as Dr. Glazer was raised himself, with the gospel of Jesus Christ. And then we talked about 9/11 and the new Middle East conference, which is this Friday. I'm flying up to New York City tomorrow night, so I'll be there broadcasting Friday. And then in the context of all of that, what really got that started was finding out about Joel Rosenberg's brand new book. Of course, Joel is a New York Times bestselling author, 15 novels, 5 nonfictions. And this one, just fascinating. And so in this conversation back and forth, and Joel's been on the show before. And so this particular book, which is nonfiction, really takes you, I'll call it rare air. Joel, it's been amazing to see what God has allowed Joel Rosenberg to be a part of in the Middle East, and having evangelical Christians in the rooms with people like the Saudi Crown Prince, Egypt's President, Jordan's King Abdullah, United Arab Emirates Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed. You got Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in there. And then, of course, you got Trump and Mike Pence. And what do all those people have in common? Well, it's in this case, it's Joel C. Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author. Joel, how are you? Thanks for being here today.
Steve, great to be with you. I'm honored to talk to you.
The more I get to know you, the more often you're on the show, the more I read, the more I'm just confounded by all the different things that the Lord has allowed you to experience. So we're going to go down this road because I've really thoroughly enjoyed the book. So I've got several things that I've highlighted that we can talk about. By the way, friends, this is a pretty hefty read, so it's not like you're going to be able to even scratch the surface today. Call this an appetizer at best, but there are things here that you and I just would never have access to, because these were behind closed door meetings with really the leaders throughout the Middle East. But do you ever step back, Joel, and just kind of in amazement look at what the Lord has done with you and has allowed you to be a part of?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm a Jewish kid that grew up in New York State. I'm a failed political consultant. Everyone I ever worked for lost. You know, so, you know, I had dinner with a friend of mine, a former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo. I got to meet him, and he's in this book, Enemies and Allies, because, and in fact, he's chapter one, because he was a reader of my political thrillers, and I didn't know him, and he was in Congress at that time, and one of his assistants reached out to me and said, hey, my boss is a fan of your books. If you ever, you know, when you're back in the States, you live in Israel, you're back in the States, come up and have coffee with him. Great. Who knew? Who knew that he was going to be the CIA director, Secretary of State? So we had dinner on Friday night, and I interviewed him for as I kicked off this Enemies and Allies book tour. But the reason I say it is because I said to Mike, look, I get that you've met with all these leaders.
Right.
Yeah, of course Trump has. Of course Pence has. Of course Biden has, and Blinken. But me? Like, I actually describe a scene in the book, Steve. I'm not sure if you're there yet, but in the Oval Office with the President of the United States, President Donald Trump, Pence is to my right, Pompeo's to my left, and then National Security Advisor John Bolton is over there. And I've written so many scenes in my novels in that room.
Yeah,
I'd never been there. So when I sit down, honestly, I should be thinking, oh, I'm going to have this big conversation on Iran and Israel and radical Islam. Honestly, Steve, what I was thinking of is the old Sesame Street ditty. One of these things is not like the other.
That's exactly the song, Joel. That song was just going through my head. you were explaining that.
That's my life story. That's my theme song.
So. Yeah, just completely amazing. So Enemies and Allies, an unforgettable journey inside the fast-moving and immensely turbulent modern Middle East. Was there, because you're going through all this, and then all the evangelicals and all the people that you met there in the Middle East, Joel, which God used and factored into the Abraham Accords. I mean, just mind-boggling stuff. But was there, how did you get to the point where you felt like you could do this, you could release this? Because obviously there were a lot of conversations here and people that you met with that at the time, nobody could really know exactly what was going on.
Well, okay, so it's an interesting question, Steve. I've led six delegations of evangelical Christians to meet with the top leaders, as you say, of the Middle East. And most of those conversations were actually on the record. There were parts of those conversations that were off, if it was off the record, if it was particularly sensitive. And there was a few cases where they didn't want anything on the record at the time, but later they allowed me to take our notes and put some of it on the record.
Yeah.
But I've had actually many more meetings than those six, you know, with President El-Sisi. I've had five meetings with him, King Abdullah of Jordan, five meetings with him, and so forth. And so, I did not intend to go into these meetings to write a book. In fact, initially, all of the meetings, while, quote, on the record, meaning we could take careful notes and we could talk about it, but they really, at first, all these leaders said, let's just meet. Let's just talk. Let's not do a big press release or photos. But in every single case, they changed their mind,
right,
and then they went public. And then we were on the front page of their newspapers and on the lead of their TV networks. So over time, it became clear this was a story not only did we want to tell, but that they wanted told. Now, I'm not working for any of these world leaders. I call the balls and strikes the way they are. I think this is the fairest book about any of them.
Yeah.
But some of these are very controversial leaders, and I am critical of them in a number of ways.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about it, because you know, you've mentioned about it when you've been on the show before, and I've read things and seen things online. But to really pull it all into one book where you kind of go down all these various roads, it's like you mentioned before, one of these things is not like the other. And it's really just shocking to see what all happened and the access that was able to be opened up not only to you and your wife and your boys, but also to other evangelical leaders in an environment where most people would think that's oil and water, pun intended, and those things are never going to mix.
Right, yet, right. Why is a Jewish American evangelical Israeli sitting with the crown prince of Saudi Arabia? I had a senior official.
Well, hold that thought. We're up on a break, Joel. We're up on a break. But hit the pause button there. Don't go anywhere, friends, because this is just going to get deeper and more amazing as we dive into this Enemies and Allies with Joel Rosenberg. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, here with New York Times bestselling author Joel C. Rosenberg. 15 novels, 5 nonfictions. The brand new one, I just put the links up on Facebook Live. I'll continue to share this. Because if you have any interest in the Middle East, and you actually should, beyond the minimum of praying for the peace of Jerusalem as a follower of Christ, what happens in the Middle East has reverberations and sends shockwaves around the world. That's why every president in the United States has to deal with it to one extent or another. And of course, with Afghanistan on the front burner now, literally and figuratively, back in the news, it's amazing in just 1 week how much the news has kind of turned its back on what's happening in Afghanistan. But how do you factor Afghanistan into what's already been going on, especially in the last 20 years since 9/11, with the 20th anniversary coming up this Saturday? So just amazing timing. The book just went live, so you can get it Amazon, wherever you get your books, by Joel C. Rosenberg. Enemies and Allies, an unforgettable journey inside, and truly that's accurate, inside the fast-moving and immensely turbulent modern Middle East, because Joel has had access to all the biggest leaders in the Middle East, which is unusual, especially for somebody that grew up with a Jewish background and then as a follower of Jesus Christ and other evangelicals, and understanding who these leaders are in the movement and what's happened in the Middle East, especially since 9/11. So just fascinating. I can't recommend the book highly enough. Joel C. Rosenberg, Enemies and Allies. So again, Joel, thank you so much. I'm sure you're just slammed busy-wise. By the way, did you do your annual trip to the Outer Banks of North Carolina this year?
We did, yes. We do an annual discipleship retreat there. And we've been doing it for 20 years.
Wow.
And it's just so special. I And we love the Outer Banks, the whole state of North Carolina, but especially the Outer Banks.
Yeah, just beautiful out there. So back to kind of the timing and everything of the book. So did you kind of see, because I want to fold Afghanistan in here as much as possible, then I want to dive into some of the other aspects of enemies and allies. But did you kind of see this on the horizon, or were you shocked like so many of us, Joel, with the debacle that was the U.S. exit from Afghanistan?
Well, I was horrified, but I wasn't shocked, and I'll tell you why. In Enemies and Allies, I talk about the transition from President Trump and how he handled the Middle East to President Biden. And obviously, I had to put the book to bed, as it were, in the end of March. So, you know, it's been a few months now till it released. But Enemies and Allies, I deal with the fact that some of Biden's closest friends have been his biggest critics. You know, one, Bob Gates, who was the defense secretary during the Obama-Biden administration. Bob Gates said on the record, you know, in his own memoir, look, I love Joe Biden. If I needed somebody in a crisis, I'd call Joe. I love this guy. But Joe has been wrong on every foreign policy and national security decision for the last 40 years. Now, I quote Gates in the book, but in fairness to Biden, I say that's not really true. And here's a list of things that Biden has done right. But I point out, why does Gates say this? And one of the reasons is because in 2011, Biden boasted that he persuaded President Obama to remove 100% of U.S. military forces out of Iraq. And that Biden was put in charge of that operation. Now, what happened? Well, Gates and Leon Panetta, the CIA director, for a Democrat, they and Republicans warned Obama and Biden, don't do that. You're going to create a vacuum into which bad forces are going to surge. And that's where ISIS emerged, in that vacuum. Mm-hmm. And this is where genocide emerged because of that. And so you would think, you would hope, you would pray that Biden would learn the lesson of full military withdrawal prematurely could lead to genocide. And yet he's going down the same dangerous, catastrophic road in Afghanistan. So horrified, but not surprised.
Yeah, I echo that exactly. And it was just terrible to watch and ongoing, obviously. That's why all of us need to just don't let Afghanistan fall off your map. Don't let it fall off your prayer map, everybody. We need to continue to pray because there are Americans that are stuck over there. There's allies that are stuck over there. I have a couple of friends. One has been on the show. Both of them have been on the show, but you wouldn't know it because they don't use their names and stuff, who are still dealing with. And the State Department has literally stopped planes from leaving the area. So it's a big mess. But when you look at Afghanistan, and you talk about this in part one, talking about the threats and enemies and allies, kind of look at Iran, you look at Russia, and then Turkey. And then how do we kind of say anything you want to about those three? I think we're generally aware of them. But that as kind of an axis of evil, if you will, Iran, Russia, and Turkey. And then now how does Afghanistan factor into what's going on there, specifically with respect to our own national security interests and our own security as a country, but also Israel? I know there's a lot there, but that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Look, I've been to Afghanistan. I've spent time with tribal Muslim leaders. I've spent time with Christians on the ground in Afghanistan. I think the way to understand why this is so bad is that what President Biden has done is just surrendered to the forces of radical Islamism on the eve of the 20th anniversary of 9/11, when we had won.
Yeah.
Now, it was messy. It's Afghanistan. It's not Paris. You know, it's not like we kicked out the Nazis and now we've got Paris and it's France and it's beautiful. Look, it's a troubled, poverty-stricken country. We get that. But remember, for the last 4 years, and I'm not trying to be a partisan, I'm just look at the analysis. The last 4 years, it was stable. No Americans were dying. Afghan troops were dying in defending themselves. But we only had 2,500 troops there in the end, and about 7,500 NATO forces. And together, that was enough to kind of bolster the local forces to keep the Taliban out. And yet it's like Biden pulled out the Jenga stick and the whole thing collapsed. Now, that's bad. But why is it strategically significant? Because if President Biden doesn't know how to deal with the Taliban, how are we going to trust him to deal with Tehran, right? The radical Islamists in Afghanistan are bad, and they could project power and force and terror eventually. But the main thing is that the Iranian regime is just 2 months away, 2 months, Steve, away from having enough enriched nuclear fuel to start building nuclear warheads. Now, Israel is preparing for possible airstrikes into Iran. And I describe this in the book. Like, I interviewed the top leaders in Israel, including the defense minister, and like to get the absolute latest on what's going on. And what Biden has done is emboldened our enemies and terrified and unnerved our allies on the eve of 9/11. Now, I'm sorry, this is so dangerous, and yet we're at the beginning of the Biden administration. We have 3.5 years to go.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's just shocking, the reverberations of that and how they did not. They had the intelligence, right? I think we all agree, Joel, that they had the intelligence.
Right. This is a fundamental misunderstanding of the threat of radical Islamism, right? Biden did this before in Iraq, and it led to genocide. He didn't get it. He didn't learn his lessons. Well, look at the difference here. Trump was a novice. He had no foreign policy experience, and yet he took out Qasem Soleimani, the top Iranian terrorist. He took out Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the top ISIS terrorist. He dismantled the caliphate. He liberated 5 million people that were trapped under the ISIS caliphate.
Yeah.
He strengthened Israel. He led to 4 Arab-Israeli peace treaties known as the Abraham Accords. And he'd never done it before. Biden has been doing this for 50 years.
Yeah, unbelievable.
What we have is incompetence fused with hubris.
Oh, man.
Killing Americans and our allies.
Absolutely. Hold that thought. Talking to Joel C. Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author, Enemies and Allies. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
That's right. Especially then. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show with Joel C. Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author, 15 novels, 5 nonfictions. Enemies and Allies is the brand new one. Perfect timing, just remarkable, as takes us into what's been going on in the Middle East for the last 20 years. A lot of upheaval, but not all bad. There's been a lot of great things, especially the 4 years of the Trump administration. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Joel's interactions with other people as well, because it was amazing how God allowed other evangelicals to be a part of this. The Saudi crown prince, Egypt's president, Jordan's king, United Arab Emirates crown prince, of course, Israel prime minister at the time, Benjamin Netanyahu, and then you got a full Trump and Pence in there. We're going to get to all those, but right now we're having a brief conversation about Afghanistan. I wanted to ask you, Joel, in terms of the different Arab leaders and Muslim leaders that you met with in the context of the book, Enemies and Allies, and you really take us into all those rooms, which is absolutely fascinating. Have you heard from any of them, or what's your read on their reaction to what's happening in Afghanistan? Because the Middle East has now just been thrown asunder again with this. I don't even know how to describe it in terms of the impact it could have on all these people that are really can be allies of ours and people that you met with.
Yeah, I remain in close contact, not on a regular basis always,
sure,
with the top people, but their inner circle and their senior advisors. And I will tell you, from multiple sources in the Arab world, and of course in Israel, they're horrified. Their reaction is similar to what I told you. I'm horrified by what Biden did in surrendering to radical Islamism, but not surprised. And the challenge for these leaders in the Middle East is, they have to try to build a good, strong relationship with any president of any party, right? They're not Republicans. They're not Democrats. They have their own national interests. But what Israeli and Arab leaders are thinking right now, Steve, and I can tell you this from deep inside their camps, they are observing Biden retreating from the Middle East.
Yeah.
And they are having to calculate now that they may be left all by themselves. Not in rhetoric. There'll be plenty of rhetoric. Oh, no, we're standing with you. But if Iran is really 2 months away from having the nuclear fuel ready to build the bomb, then maybe they take a year until they do it. And then once they do it, maybe it takes longer to attach it to a high-speed missile. But the point is, if they're 2 months away from having the enriched fuel to build nuclear weapons, Israel's running out of time.
Yeah.
The Arabs are running out of time to take out those facilities and set the program back. Now, you can't possibly imagine that Joe Biden, having retreated from Afghanistan, is going to launch an air war against the Iranian nuclear regime. Yeah. Like, so Israel is a small country and these Arab countries are fairly small, but everybody's thinking, what if we have to do this on our own?
Yeah.
And they are actively taking steps to prepare for that right now. I can tell you that. And that is a, you know, that sounds like one of my political thrillers, one right. of my, novels, not what you want to see in real life.
I'll switch gears. Thank you for indulging me on all of that. There's so much more that we can talk sure. about. We'll have a chance to do that again.
That's why I wrote Enemies and Allies, because yep. these are the issues.
These are the issues. And as you go into that and kind of look at the threats, and do you think that people properly understand the threat that Russia, Iran, and Turkey play in terms of the Middle East?
Well, no, but I hope people will read Enemies and Allies both to look at the threats that are where are we 20 years after 9/11? Yeah. What's the lay of the land? But also we'll talk in a moment, I hope, about what's good, what some really good things are happening. God is moving in the Middle East in some positive ways. But what I do describe, just to say it very briefly, is Iran has been thwarted over the last 20 years from getting nuclear weapons. Their nuclear scientists mysteriously die. Their nuclear research plants mysteriously blow up. Their nuclear the computers that run the nuclear program mysteriously get malware and worms and crash. Why does that happen? Because intelligence operations are slowing the Iranians down.
Yeah.
So what are they doing? They're turning to nuclear powers like Russia, China, North Korea, and to another emerging dark power, Turkey, which used to be an ally. I mean, technically still is, but under Recep Erdogan is moving towards the Russian-Iranian orbit and moving to the dark side. That's what Iran is doing. And that's why Iran is so dangerous. Not just that they could get the bomb soon, but that they're building this alliance
yeah.
with America's and Israel's absolute worst enemies. And together, they're even more dangerous than by themselves.
There's a story that you tell in the book that actually happened with, I think it was the Mossad that had guys go into Iran, like in the middle of the night with blow torches or whatever they're doing, going into all these safes. I was like, have I never heard this story?
The Israeli Secret Service, called the Mossad, they figured out where Iran kept all of their top secret nuclear weapons research. They knew where it was. They snuck in the middle of the night. They used blow torches to open up the safes, and they took out many, many tons, not folders, but tons of, they stole the entire nuclear archive, man. And they were able to get it out of Iran undetected and back to Israel. And then they not only went over it, they gave copies to the Americans under the Trump administration, and they released it, some of it, to the world. A stunning
oh,
operation, and I describe it in Enemies and Allies.
So now,
I
mean, when you write about that, that's going to have to be...
If I'd written about that as a novel, I don't think people would have believed me.
I was going to say, all right, now, Joel, you could do that as a nonfiction.
But
if you try to do that as a...
It's real, and I tell the story.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. So, all right, so let's talk about these leaders that I met with. And in the last segment of the show, I definitely want to talk about what's positive, because there's a whole lot about it. The last part of the book's all about what's positive and going on there. All right, so you got Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. You've got Egypt's President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. You've got Jordan's King Abdullah. And you got UAE. You got Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed. Can I ask you if you have a favorite? Are you allowed to answer that question? It's just are four very different people.
I don't have a favorite, but let me just tell you the quick story of meeting the first one, which was King Abdullah of Jordan. I mentioned maybe it was off camera, maybe it was on the break, that the first time I met him was because I'd written a novel in which I made him a character, and ISIS is trying to kill him and take over his country. An advisor to him read it, then brought the novel to the king and said, Your Majesty, you have to read this. He said, why? He said, because you're in it. And he looked at it. He was like, what are you talking about? It's a novel. I know, but you're a character. So the king took 2 days to read it.
Wow.
And rather than banning me from the kingdom, he invited my wife and me to come for 5 days. Now, when we had lunch with him at the main palace, when we first arrived, he said, Joel, I was thinking, where would it be fun to meet you for the first time? And he said, well, you did blow up this palace that we're in right now. I thought maybe I should bring you here and show it to you. Hilarious. And then he said, you know, I noticed you made me a character, but my advisors, my staff, you fictionalize them. But I can see who's who. So I have bought copies of your book, and I give them to my staff. I say, here, you're on page 94. You don't make it to the terrorist attack. Go read that. And I tell that story in much more detail, but it's hilarious. I tell it in Enemies and Allies, and I just really liked him. He's a moderate Muslim.
Yeah.
He is the former head of Jordanian Special Forces. He flies his own Black Hawk helicopters. He is an action character. He is an action figure.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
And I literally couldn't make him up. So I put him in my novels, and then who knew, I met him. And by the way, he read the second one in the series, Steve. So I brought him copies of the first one, cool. which was called The Third Target. And I said, can I give you a couple copies of the first one? Because you didn't read that one. He goes, yeah, I'd love to see it. I said, let me show you page one. The first sentence of the series reads, I had never met a king before. Jeez. And he laughs and he pulled out a pen. He goes, well, you have now. And he signed it and he gave it back.
He gives you back. He signs your book.
The guy's hilarious.
Yeah, that's the whole thing I kept thinking as I was reading through. We were talking about Enemies and Allies with Joel Rosenberg. That's what I kept thinking. This guy, who wouldn't want to hang out with this guy? He was just such a fascinating, contagiously funny
Absolutely
character.
Fascinating. And that's why I said to him on our final night, 2.5-hour dinner at his private palace. And I said, look, I'm Jewish. I'm evangelical. I'm Israeli. I'm American. Like, I hope you saw from the novel that I don't want you to be, you know, targeted.
Yeah.
It was a worst case scenario, but I've learned so much. And I'm just wondering, I think a lot of evangelical Christian leaders, people with enormous influence, would benefit from knowing an Arab Muslim monarch who's a moderate. Whoever meets these people.
Right.
I said, would you ever like to meet them? He goes, Joel, let's put together a delegation and bring them here to the palace and to the kingdom. And that's what we set into motion to do. And that was what set into motion six delegations throughout the region. Most of these countries had never invited Christians into their palaces before.
Yeah, and were there any leaders that said, no, I don't want to do that?
No. In fact, we weren't inviting ourselves. They were inviting us.
Yeah, just amazing. We're talking to Joel Rosenberg, Enemies and Allies, brand new book just came out, looking at everything that's been going on in the Middle East, specifically since 9/11. Of course, 20th anniversary this Saturday. We're going to talk about the good things, a couple more things about these leaders, but then we'll talk about the good things that God is doing over there. We'll be right back.
Of his own people.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Great to be with you today. I'll be on the road tomorrow, so I recorded a Theology Thursday earlier this week. One of the professors at Bob Jones Seminary, just an incredible conversation about sex, quite frankly, and the sin of it, the theology behind it, and why most churches won't talk about it. We won't teach it. We don't teach it well. And so that's tomorrow's Theology Thursday. Then Friday, I'll be broadcasting live from New York City. I'll be at the 9/11 conference, 911theconference.com. You can watch it online for free. You just got to register. So 911conference.com. I'll be there on Friday. Dr. Mitch Glazer was on the show recently. He's the president of Chosen People Ministries. So that's really a 20-year look back, and they have some incredible guests. Joel Rosenberg already taped a spot for that, so he's a part of that program, and my friend Ingram Lotz is part of that program, so I'll be there on Friday. And then, God willing, back in here in the chair on Monday. But today, talking to New York Times bestselling author Joel Rosenberg, Enemies and Allies is the brand new book, a nonfiction book, just fascinating about really everything from a 30,000-foot level down to a in the building, in the meeting with people like the Saudi Crown Prince or Egypt's president, Jordan's king, UAE, United Arab Emirates Crown Prince, and that information, which is fascinating and enlightening. And we were talking during the break, Joel, and again, thanks for spending so much time with us today. We were talking during the break about that the media oftentimes we don't hear about. That was one of the things I loved about reading through the book, is that you're like, wow, this is really encouraging. This surprised me, the openness of these Arab leaders, most of whom are Muslim, talking about Christianity and trying to be more open and embracing of different religions in the context of their own countries. I'm like, wow, that was kind of new information to me. And then as you look at what God's doing over there, but oftentimes we don't, if it bleeds, it leads. So usually we're just hearing about the negative stuff.
Yeah, let me give you an example of super exciting things. Like there's a tectonic shift going on in Arab Muslim thinking towards Jews and Christians. It used to be that you weren't supposed to have any contact with Jews and Christians, and of course this and all kinds of extremism was being taught in the mosques and in the textbooks. But in every country that I went to, this is changing. They are changing the textbooks. They are taking all that out. They're firing the clerics in the mosque who continue to teach extremism and won't change. They're teaching reform and moving through reforms in their countries. They're embracing Israel for Arab Israeli peace and normalization deals, the Abraham Accords, just last year.
Yeah, crazy.
But here's the most exciting story, or one of them. So I was getting to know President El-Sisi of Egypt. We were talking about him. And he said to me, Joel, I'm in the process of finishing building the largest church building in the history of the Middle East. Okay. And he goes, next January on Orthodox Christmas Eve, they celebrate it differently in the Middle East than we celebrate in the West. But on Orthodox Christmas Eve, I'm going to give this church building to the Christians of my country as a Christmas present.
Jeez.
And I would love it if you would bring a second delegation of Christian leaders to be there as we open it and be with me as we celebrate and Muslims honor our Christians who live in Egypt. I'm like, yeah. and he said, would you be willing to try to encourage any top American official maybe to come and be part of it too? So I asked Secretary Mike Pompeo, a personal friend.
Good choice.
Would he come? And he came, and it's just amazing to think that a devout Muslim Arab of the largest Arab Muslim country in the world, 100 million Egyptians, would honor the 17 million Christians of Egypt, the largest Christian population in the Arab world, on Christmas Eve like this. And I that's just one example, but this has never happened in history. And you never, I almost guarantee you that your listeners and your viewers have never heard that story.
Yeah. Oh, never.
But that's in the world of horror shows going on in the Middle East. Shouldn't the media be telling some of the good things that are happening? And that's what I'm doing, not only in the book Enemies and Allies, but last year I launched two websites,
right?
All Israel news and all Arab news, to track the stories, good, bad, and ugly. And we have free emails you can just sign up for. And we'll just send you the news headlines. We are tracking the latest stories, exclusive coverage, exclusive interviews with the major newsmakers. And these are stories you're not going to read anywhere else.
Why are these Arab leaders, Muslim leaders in the Middle East, changing their tone? Because one of the things that was interesting as you were sharing in the book, Enemies and Allies, about these various meetings, is their desire to see the moderate version of Islam come to the forefront. And I don't remember who it was, which chapter it was, and they were talking about how they had gotten rid of, literally, I think they had fired tens of thousands of imams and leaders, and mosque leaders and stuff, because they were preaching a radical version of Islam. And I know that's confusing for people, Joel, because we're like, would the real Islam please stand up? So help us understand just the lay of the land from an Islamic standpoint. You talk a lot about Islamism. We talk about fundamentalist Islamic jihad. I don't think people really understand that there's a couple of different flavors here.
Okay. Super fast. I will try to keep it simple.
Sure.
And then you'll need the book and then these guys to unpack. But the short version is, look, obviously as followers of Jesus Christ, we totally disagree with Islam. It's not true. Okay. That's one thing. The second thing is, you know, some people would say, some Christians would say, radical Islam is the true Islam and moderate Islam is a fake Islam. Look, I don't think for the purposes of what I'm doing with this book, it's my job to go parse out the theology of a religion I disagree with.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm happy, however, let me put it this, if there are more and more leaders who say, let's be against terrorism and against and make peace with Israel, then I want their team to win, in terms of geopolitics. Now, in terms of the gospel, I want every Muslim and Jew and everybody in the world to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ and be able to make their decision for themselves for or against Christ, the death, resurrection, and return of Jesus Christ. That's the only thing that matters at the end. But for now, we in a world of radical Islam, we want the moderates to win, okay? It doesn't mean we don't want them to know Jesus personally, but, you know, we've got multiple objectives, okay? So I sort of divide those things out. Now, what is radical Islamism? Let me tell you, Steve, that the vast, vast, vast majority of Muslims in the world, 1.8 billion, are not violent.
Right.
They're not extremists. They're wrong theologically, but they're not crazy and they're not dangerous. But and I've gone through all the studies. It's an extraordinary amount of research that's been done in the last 30 or 40 years. And about 90% of the Islamic world doesn't believe in radicalism at all. What is radicalism? The belief that you can and should use violence to achieve your political and religious objectives. Now, you can ask that question in polls from 1,000 different angles, and you keep finding that about 90% of Muslims say, no, that's crazy. I don't believe in suicide bombings. I don't believe in flying a plane into a capital city or whatever. They're against it. But between 7 and 10% of the Muslim world does support radical Islam, the use of violence. Now, that doesn't mean they'll all do it, but they support it. So when people say the vast majority of Muslims are nonviolent, that's true. But when you take 10% of 1.8 billion people, that's 180 million people.
Yeah, it's a big number. Okay?
That's the pool from which the terrorists recruit, right? That's people who say, I think that's okay. In fact, it's a good thing to use violence. They're not going to go strap on a suicide belt themselves. But might their children get pulled in?
Right.
And might they encourage it? Yes. And that's the challenge we face. That's why you say, wait a minute. The United States of America and all of NATO has been fighting radical Islam just in Afghanistan for 20 years. Why haven't we won? Because they keep recruiting from the 180 million.
They got a deep bench.
They got a deep bench. And basically, they outlasted the United States. Yeah. They outlasted the Biden administration.
They play the long game.
They got Biden to the point of exhaustion.
Yeah.
And rather than say, you know what? This is not good, but it's manageable to keep the stability of our counterterror efforts in Afghanistan. Biden just said, I'm pulling out the Jenga stick and I don't care. And he thought it wouldn't collapse. Everybody told him it would collapse. Yeah. And it collapsed.
And sure enough, it's collapsed. So would you say, Joel, and we got about a minute and a half, and then just stick around just for a minute when the radio's over because I want to pray for you. Religious moderation and inclusion, would you say, of all the things you talk about, a lot of different angles in part three of the book, looking at the future, in terms of what you're excited about, short of when Jesus comes back and takes care of everything, what's most exciting to you about what God's doing in the Middle East?
Well, the most exciting thing by far is that more Muslims and more Jews are considering the claims of the gospel of Jesus Christ than ever before.
Wow.
And more Muslims and Jews have left their backgrounds and come to true born-again faith in Jesus Christ than ever before in history over the last 2,000 years combined.
Yeah.
This is game-changing. Now, that's the most exciting thing as a believer. Now, as an American, as an Israeli, I would say the other exciting thing are these peace treaties, are the fact that devout Muslims, maybe they haven't left Christ, they haven't left Islam, but they are making peace and they do want a better relationship with Jews and Christians. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
The Bible says pray for peace, so we pray for peace. And
amen.
God is giving us a measure of peace with some of these countries.
Amen. Joel C. Rosenberg, New York Times bestselling author, Enemies and Allies, available now. I put the links up for Amazon. Anywhere you get your books, you're going to be able to get it. I meant to get this in. Proverbs 22:29. Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. And that's exactly what has happened in Joel Rosenberg's life. Really, really amazing. Joel, always great to have you. Thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are. It's always a great blessing. God bless you, and thanks for that.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right, hold on just a second, because I'll pray for you after we're done. I'll be in the air at some point tomorrow, heading to New York City, but you'll hear Theology Thursday tomorrow. I'll be back live on Friday. This is Steve Noble and the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.